Godzilla is now in New York City.
Monster 01 and 02, commence the attack.
Welcome back to Stomp This Way. I'm joined here by Andrew, and we are just back from Tulsa, from the IMAX theater. It's been a couple hours now, yeah. But we just finished watching Godzilla Minus One.
What a movie that was.
What a movie. I can't wait to talk about it. I've got so many thoughts, so many things I want to talk about. I'm here for it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm here for it. And you should be, too. But anyway, so, you know, I was trying to remember how I used to do all these episodes. And I remembered, okay, I used to do the show notes, and we used to do production trivia, box office, cast and crew, plot summary, then news. And we would talk about the plot, then we'd talk about the effects, then we'd talk about the score, and then we'd give it a letter grade. And I'm gonna pretty much carry over that original format, at least for now, for this episode.
It seemed to work pretty well.
I think we had a pretty good something going. So anyway, what I'm going to do is I'm gonna do the production trivia, because I don't think there's any spoilers in that. We're gonna do the box office, we're gonna do the cast and crew, then we'll do a brief spoiler-free review, and then I'll play a trailer, then we'll come back, I'll read the plot summary that I just wrote up. It's a little rough around the edges, but we'll get over it, and then we'll dive deep into the spoilers. So, Andrew, are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
All right, so let's start with production trivia. So this movie actually began pre-production way back in 2019, but, you know, COVID happened, it was kind of delayed, pushed back, but that did give them about 3 years to work on this script, which I think, as you'll see later, is reflected in the quality of the film. Just some interesting tidbits. This is the first Godzilla film to really technically be a period piece. You know, we've had some Godzilla films that were set in the future. Mm-hmm. There have been, you know, flashbacks and sequences set in a time prior to whatever film, you know, whatever time the film was made mm-hmm. in or whatever. Mm-hmm. But this is the first one where the whole film is actually set in a period prior to when the film was mm-hmm. released. So that's really interesting. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Of course, director Takashi Yamazaki had previously kind of already worked with Godzilla. He had Godzilla in a cameo in his film Always Sunset on 3rd Street 2. I'm sure you've probably seen that YouTube clip before. But and then this film was the principal photography was between March 17th and June 11th of 2022. Hmm. So they've been working on this film's in post-production for about a year and a half before it was released. That is a long time. This movie had a long production for most Japanese films. You know, we usually, when we'd go back and talk about those Godzilla movies, especially back in the old days, a lot of times they were less than a year.
Oh, yes.
And even still today, most Japanese films don't have a production period of more than 2 years. They're usually a lot, you know, it's not like these Hollywood films that they spend, you know,
years,
5-6 years worth making or whatever. But anyway, some box office information. This movie premiered on November 3rd in Japan, and on December 1st, actually, they had their IMAX one-day event today on November 29th, but it technically premieres wide nationwide on December 1st on this Friday. Estimated budget of about $15 million, which, as Wikipedia pointed out, is about 1/10 of the budget of Godzilla vs. Kong. So, you know.
A little bit of a budget.
A big drop off, but we'll talk about the comparison and quality here in a little bit. Open to 1.04 billion yen, or about $7.8 million in Japan on opening weekend.
Not bad.
I believe the attendance was higher attended, I believe, than any of the MonsterVerse or Reiwa era films so far. I think technically, like if you convert it to American dollars, I think Shin Godzilla didn't sell as many tickets, but it technically made more money because the Japanese yen was stronger when it came out compared to today when it's weaker against the U.S. dollar. But that's getting into the weeds a little bit. But anyway, so it did really well, though. That's the point. It did really well. It was currently, prior to its U.S. release, sitting at around a box office of $20 million in U.S. dollars. So already over its production budget. Of course, you know, you got to factor in ads and everything. I read that it, somewhere that they were kind of projecting for the U.S. opening between $8 and $10 million. So, and Toho put in they didn't really market this movie
outside.
You know, they didn't run a lot of trailers in front of movies. They didn't run any TV ads, I don't think. So they, you know, they're distributing this without a U.S. partner. I think this is the first film they've done that, because usually they distribute either with, you know, maybe, you know, a U.S. partner like Warner Brothers or something, or if a lot of, most of their anime movies, they distribute with Crunchyroll. So they're doing this
solo.
On their own, solo this time around. So, you know, they aren't working on a budget. But I think that it'll more than justify whatever they spent to put this out in the U.S. But anyway, let's see. Cast and crew. This film is directed by Takashi Yamazaki. Written by Takashi Yamazaki. Visual effects by Takashi Yamazaki and Kyoko Shibuya. These are, I mean, obviously, they're over the special effects. Of course, there was a lot of digital artists and so on that went into working on this movie. But music by Naoki Sato, and with themes by Fukube. And then starring Ryunosuke Kamiki, Minami Hamabe, Yuki Yamada, Munetaka Aoki, Hidetaka Yoshiaka, Yoshioka? I'm sorry, I'm butchering these names already. It's first episode. Sakura Ando and Kuronosuke Sasaki. Sorry.
You got there.
But anyway, let's do a brief, before we get into the spoilers and everything, let's just do a brief spoiler-free thought
review.
So, why don't you start, Andrew?
Oh, you know, it was a good movie, I thought. It was, production was pretty good on it. The effects and everything looked about as good as any of the other monster movies we've seen here lately. Mm-hmm. And Yes.
Would you recommend, do you think it's worth people going to the theater and seeing it?
I do recommend going to see this movie. I think it would be a fun outing.
A fun outing. Yeah, listen, I think definitely, if you have any affinity for Godzilla, you need to go out and see this on the big screen. I'll just go ahead and say I love this movie. It, like Andrew said, you know, of course, we'll go in further depth with all this. Visual effects, by and large, pretty good. The script is really solid. I think they do a great job. Godzilla is probably as scary as he's ever been in this movie. Sound design is great in this movie. Score is great in this movie. It's just a really good time. It's, the characters are, I'll go ahead and say the characters are probably the most fleshed out characters we've ever had in a Godzilla movie. This movie really takes the time, more so than any Godzilla movie in history, I think, to build up the characters, flesh out the characters, make you care about the characters. and then have the Monster Mayhem on top of it. And the Monster Mayhem is really good. They really treat Godzilla with a lot of reverence and respect. It's a great time.
Yes.
A great time. I definitely think you need to see it in the theater. So that's my spoiler-free thoughts. So now we're going to pause. We're going to listen to the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll come back. I'll read off my handy-dandy plot summary. And then we will get into spoilers on Godzilla Minus One.
あれはゴジラ。
政府はこの情報を国民に伏せています。誰かが貧乏口しかなきゃなんねんだよ。みんな死んだぞ。この恥知らず。その怪物は許しちゃくれない。
ゴジラ -1
All right, we're back. Okay, guys, final warning. I'm about to spoil the crap out of this movie, and I would strongly suggest you go see it without any spoilers. So go watch it, then come back.
And listen.
And listen to our review. But so here I am. I'm about to start the plot summary. I wrote this in about 30 seconds just now. Actually, probably about 2 minutes. But so if it's a little rough around the edges, and there's obviously a lot of plot points that I skipped that we'll talk about and more in depth here, but here's the basic outline of the plot. In the final days of the war, kamikaze pilot Koichi Shikishima fakes an engine problem on his plane and lands for repairs on Odo Island. There, he and the mechanics stationed on the island encounter a creature the locals call Godzilla, a dinosaur-like monster. The head mechanic, Tachibana, orders Koichi to get in his plane and shoot the creature with the machine guns mounted on the aircraft. But Koichi freezes out of fear, and all the mechanics, save Tachibana, are killed. Upon returning home, Koichi is haunted by the deaths of the mechanics, but life seems to be turning around for him after he takes in a woman named Noriko and a child in her care named Akiko. Koichi gets a job clearing mines from the sea, and he makes quick friends with the crew. However, one day they are ordered to engage with a now irradiated and much larger Godzilla in order to allow time for a battleship to arrive. The encounter goes poorly, and Godzilla destroys the battleship and continues on to Japan, unharmed. Later, Godzilla marches on the Ginza district, and Noriko is seemingly killed in the attack. The citizens of Tokyo band together and hatch a plan to kill Godzilla, which involves Koichi piloting an aircraft as bait. Koichi secretly has Tachibana rig the aircraft with explosives, with a plan to fly the plane into the creature's mouth. In the final battle with Godzilla, Koichi is successful in getting the plane into the creature's maw while also ejecting from the aircraft. Godzilla is seemingly killed by the resulting blast, and Koichi returns home to find that Noriko is still alive. However, Noriko appears to have radiation sickness, and we see Godzilla regenerating in the ocean as credits roll. That a pretty accurate plot summary?
That's not bad at all.
I mean, I left out some details, some character work, but we'll definitely get into that stuff. But so this film, like I said, it's a period piece, and it starts in the final days of World War II. And Koichi is an airplane pilot, a fighter pilot, and he's landing on an island, which we'll later learn is called Odo Island. Get it? Because in the original movie, it was Odo Island. Yeah. Get it? You get the reference? I get it. We learn, it is quickly established that Koichi is a coward.
Yes.
Or what I'm going to call a coward. He He didn't want to die. He didn't want a kamikaze. So he faked engine trouble or faked some kind of mechanical failure so that he had an excuse to go land on Odo Island. And I guess his plan was to wait out the war there. And the pilot, the mechanics, you know, they're on to him immediately. But they're pretty okay with it at first. But the issue arrives when, I mean, we get to see Godzilla pretty early. I'm probably not even 10 minutes into this movie. They are, you know, on that island. And in the middle of the night, Godzilla comes ashore and is, you know, causing trouble. It's a pre-irradiated Godzilla. So he's, you know, he's not massive. He's probably, I don't know, 20, 30 feet tall.
And he's not invincible.
He's this movie's version of the Godzillasaurus. But yeah, and so he comes on shore, and again, to hammer home that Koichi is a coward, they, you know, Godzilla's walking in front of his stationary plane, and Tachibana, who is the head mechanic, tells him to go shoot his, you know, whatever it is, 20 millimeter cannon on his plane at Godzilla, because Tachibana knows that they're, you know, handheld rifles are not going to do anything. Mm-hmm. And Tachibana runs and gets in his plane, but his hands are shaking and he's too frightened to pull the trigger. And, you know, the movie, you know, obviously we don't know whether it would have actually done anything, killed Godzilla or not. But, I mean, that's going to be a big deal going forward for the rest of this movie, because the mechanics end up getting killed by Godzilla in a pretty sweet scene where, I mean, basically right out of Jurassic Park, where Godzilla just
slowly
bites them and picks them up and throws them. And yeah, pretty brutal.
Yeah.
But yeah, immediately this film, it's clear immediately that this film is going to be much more character driven than, I mean, by any Godzilla movie prior to this movie. This movie really sets up the idea that Koichi, he's a coward. You know, it's a commentary on that whole situation. You know, he didn't want to die because that was, you know, especially in World War II, the honorable thing for a Japanese soldier was to die in battle. And they were literally ordering these kamikaze pilots to crash into American battleships. And, you know, he wanted to live because his mom had, in her final letter to him or whatever, had asked him to come back alive or whatever. And he didn't want to die. So he faked engine trouble. And then we don't know whether he could have saved them shooting that gun or not. But in his mind, he gets these mechanics killed by being too afraid to pull the trigger. And that's going to haunt him for most of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And you could argue he gets thousands upon thousands of people killed by not killing Godzilla in this moment when he had the chance. We have a really... And then Tachibana, of course, the mechanic, is really upset. Mm-hmm. You know, he gets pictures of all the mechanics and when they're on the boat to the mainland, I guess, and like throws them at him. And that's a big theme, is, you know, his guilt, survivor's guilt, I guess, for, you know, not being able to save those people. You know, what does it mean to want to live, you know, versus being a coward? Mm-hmm. All these things. So he comes back home and, you know, we get to meet the other main characters. He goes home to Tokyo. And, you know, people forget, you know, history books and everything always talk about the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombings and, you know, us dropping the nukes. Yeah. People forget that we had basically bombed Tokyo into oblivion with our air raids. And, you know, Tokyo is basically in pieces. And his parents had been killed in the air raids. There's this woman there who... I forget what her character is, but we'll call her Auntie because he has Akiko call her Auntie later. Yeah. But she at first is upset that he came back alive because she knew that he was a kamikaze pilot and, you know, she knew that they were supposed to die in battle. But he came back alive while her children were killed in the air raids. And like I said, his parents were killed. And so, you know, as part of that thing of also a theme of, you know, at that time, the soldiers that came back home alive were often considered cowards or dishonorable because they didn't die in battle. And so, you know, dealing with a lot of Japanese issues, you know, that are specific to the Japanese people at that time, but also dealing with broader themes, I think, that affect everybody. But, yeah, so he takes in this girl named Noriko, who's, you know, stealing off the streets to survive, and she has taken in a baby named Akiko, because the baby's parents, I assume, were killed in the firebombing as well. And so, you know what, they kind of form a little family. Union. He doesn't, you know, they don't have a physical relationship, but, you know, they live together. He builds them a little house. He gets a job, a dangerous job, but an important job.
A good paying job.
A good paying job, because nobody survives it. Clearing the mines out of the seas, because they said, well, like 60,000 mines were laid by the Imperial Navy and the U.S. Navy around the island. So we do that whole bit, and she eventually gets a job
as a desk worker,
as a some kind of like clerk or desk secretary or whatever. It's we never see her job, but it's in the Ginza district that's being rebuilt. And anyway, so and he makes for you know there's this crew on the boat. You know, I kind of thought of them as the Jaws crew because they're on a boat. They call them what? There's the captain, the doc, and the kid. The doc is like a he was a naval scientist in the war. And the kid was too young to be enlisted in the military, I guess, during the war.
He just clearing mines.
Because at this point, we're at like, what, 1948
It's been several years.
But, yeah, so I think, you know, we have a good cast of characters. I think the movie is really solid up to this point. We see in a quick flash in 1946, they're one of the atomic bomb testings, and it hit Godzilla.
Yeah,
it radiated Godzilla. So, yeah, I think it's about probably about 25 minutes into this movie. I kind of checked my watch. I don't know exactly what time. The movie was 5 o'clock was the starting time, so really probably about 5:30. I think it was probably about 25 minutes into this movie when Godzilla... they have their encounter in the boat with Godzilla. You know, they don't know. The only person that knows it, I think, is the doc, the real reason why they go out here. But they, you know, we saw in a montage of like newsreel footage or military newsreel footage that Godzilla has been attacking American battleships and sinking American battleships and other ships. And so they send Koichi's boat out there.
And the other boat that they're partnered
and his
with.
Sister boat or whatever, to, you know, to go out there. There's a battleship. There's a U.S. battleship that's been sunk or is, you know,
sinking.
Torn up, sinking. and the Navy has sent them out there to basically delay Godzilla while one of the Japanese battleships is able to get there and engage with Godzilla. So, you know, we have a really... And I'll say... You know, especially evident in this scene. Of course, it was there in that first scene, but especially evident in this scene. Godzilla is really portrayed as a force of nature, evil killing machine, and he is a, excuse my language, total badass. And I mean, they really do a great job of setting the tone, setting the mood and the atmosphere anytime Godzilla's on screen. And they have a really
ominous feel to it.
Ominous, that's right, it's a good word. Ominous feel to it. And yeah, so they basically, Godzilla chases him around. First, he sinks the sister ship, and then he chases Koichi's boat around in the water.
And they throw some mines at him.
And there's a really gnarly scene where they get a mine in his mouth, and Koichi blows it up.
Just like in Jaws.
Yeah, just like in Jaws. I just leaned over to Andrew. I was like, they're going to need a bigger boat. I mean, they did everything but say the line in the movie. It's a really gnarly scene where Godzilla, you know, he has a big chunk blown out of his head or whatever, but he does like the Wolverine heel factor and it like regenerates real fast. And now Godzilla's
mad.
Mad. and he's about to destroy their boat, but the battleship shows up, and he promptly destroys the battleship.
And that's the first time we get to see his radioactive ray.
Is that when he uses his radioactive
ray? Yeah, remember he shoots it up through the battleship?
Oh, yeah, that's right. He shoots it up. We don't get to see the whole charge-up process, really, but, yeah, he goes underwater, and he shoots it up through the... Very reminiscent of a scene in Godzilla vs. Kong, but just done better. He shoots it up through the battleship. They do a really neat thing with Godzilla's ray, where it's not just like a beam that, you know, shoots and
destroys
stuff. It's like a quick flash of blue light and then like a delayed massive explosion.
Kind
of
like a nuclear bomb.
Yeah, kind of like a nuclear bomb. And I think that's what, because like you pointed out, we'll see the whole charge-up process a little bit later, but like his dorsal plates like pop out as he's charging up, and then just like in a bomb, you know, where all the, you know, the spikes or whatever like contract and then it blows up. This like all of his dorsal fins contract back, and then he shoots. He does kind of like the GMK thing where he like draws in a big breath, and then he like shoots it out. And then there's a big boom.
Big boom.
And then the explosions that result usually kind of resemble mushroom clouds on purpose, I'm sure. But yeah, so he destroys that battleship. I'm almost also going to compliment this movie on sound design. Sound design in this movie is great. You know, one of my issues with Shin Godzilla was that they literally, they didn't re-record anything. They literally just took the sound, like the old sounds from the Showa era movies, and just recycled them, which was an artistic choice. And I'm not saying it was a terrible artistic choice, but I wasn't a huge fan of it. They did the same thing with the old pieces of music, too, in that movie. Yeah. They didn't re-record anything. They just played the old tracks. And some of the tracks were from Evangelion, but neither here nor there. But this movie, they do use the Fukube themes a little bit later, but they actually went and re-recorded them. You know, they didn't just recycle them from the old soundtracks. But, yeah, so, and that first scene is great. And then, you know, Koichi, they survive. He goes back home, kind of tells Noriko. You know, Noriko's trying to break through to him, and he finally kind of opens up and tells her about, you know, he was a kamikaze pilot that didn't do his duty, and then he let those mechanics get killed by Godzilla, and now Godzilla's back.
What when you think he's getting a little bit better?
Yeah, he was just getting better, and then it all came crashing. And then she goes off to work, and of course Godzilla has to attack the Ginza district while she's going off to work. And again, another great scene, very reminiscent of the Godzilla Attack on Tokyo in the 1954 movie. He comes in. You gotta have the classic train sequence where he picks up the train and she's in it, and he's carrying it around in his mouth for a while, and she's lucky enough to kind of, the train falls apart and she falls into the water. And then, of course, Koichi has heard that Godzilla's attacking on the radio, so he's running over there.
Yeah.
But, you know, Godzilla is stomping down the streets, headed towards her, and Koichi finds her and grabs her, and they kind of run off to the side. And then they shoot some cannons at Godzilla or something and piss him off. So this is where we see him charge up his ray and shoots it. And there's a big blast. And Noriko kind of pushes Koichi out of the way. And she, like, gets the blast. It hits her, the shockwave from the blast. And we assume at that point that she's been killed, you know. Yeah. We don't ever see her again. I thought something may be up because we never see her body, but we assume that the movie wants us to assume she's dead. They make the whole shrine, you know, in Japan, Japanese culture, they make the shrines when a loved one has passed away. And then we do all that. Now, I will say, if there is a weak point in this movie, I think the period between Godzilla's attack on the Ginza district and when they do their whole final battle with Godzilla, I think it's a period that we go probably about 45 minutes, I want to say. I didn't time it out exactly, But I think it was about 45 minutes without Godzilla. And it's a lot of, you know, the U.S. government and the Japanese government are not going to help, because any sort of military activity, they're afraid, is going to upset the Soviets, is what they say in the movie. So yeah, the citizens kind of band together and they hatch this plot to beat Godzilla. And there's a lot of going over that,
which isn't bad.
It's an interesting plot at first. I mean, they're going to do, basically the plot is they're going to use, Freon bubbles
to sink Godzilla.
I don't know the whole science, but they're going to use Freon bubbles because it like separates, creates a barrier between the salt water and Godzilla, causes them to sink. And they're going to sink him rapidly down to the bottom of a trench and hope that the pressure kills him. And then they're going to, if that doesn't work, they have this plan to deploy inflatables to rapidly bring him back up. And then they hope that the decompression will kill him. But, you know, and they come up with this plot, and then they need Koichi to pilot the aircraft to kind of lure Godzilla to where they need him lured into. And so we have this whole thing with him, them finding a prototype aircraft for him. Mm-hmm. And then he has to go. The prototype's not finished, so he has to do this whole writing letters thing to go find Tachibana, the mechanic from earlier in the movie, and bring him back. And
he waits. Yeah,
I think the movie, I mean, it's not like I said, it's not bad. It does drag a little bit here in this part of the movie. I wish there was maybe a little more interesting character work or something to kind of, you know, make this bit of the movie more kinetic. But, you know, it kind of is what it is. But, you know, Koichi has kind of decided at this point he's ready to die.
Yeah.
For his country, for Akiko's future, the little girl's future, whatever. But we'll figure it out later, which, I mean, I knew that he had done it in the moment. But the Tachibana has kind of forgiven him for what happened and has put an ejection seat in the plane because Koichi has told him that he's going to, if the other plan fails, he had Tachibana rig the, you know, fill the plane with bombs, and he's going to fly it into Godzilla's mouth and detonate it. And he was going to die with the plane, but then they put in the ejection seat, and he decides he's going to live for Akiko or whatever. And while all this is going on, at some point, the auntie who is, quote unquote, auntie who is watching Akiko, gets a telegram that, you know, we'll figure out at the end of the movie, Noriko is still alive. But anyway, let's get into this final fight. Again, anytime Godzilla's on screen, this movie is great. They get Godzilla out there. He attacks, faster than they expected. Koichi gets in the airplane. He lures Godzilla out to sea. They've commissioned like four decommissioned destroyers or something that they're using for this plot. They've been stripped of their weapons, I think.
They were meant to be sent to the UN.
Yeah, they were going to send them to the UN. You know how Godzilla feels about the UN.
Oh, yeah.
And one of my favorite scenes in cinema history and Destroy All Monsters, not to get political, but was when Godzilla showed up in New York Harbor and blows up the UN. So satisfying. But anyway, you know, they get Godzilla out there. They, with the Fukube score blaring, they get him trapped by the little Freon bubbles, and they sink him to the bottom of the ocean. And it's a pretty gnarly looking sequence, especially when they inflate it and start bringing him back up, and like his eye pops out.
His skin starts to decompose.
Yeah, and his skin starts to break apart.
Break apart.
But then he chews through the inflatables. So, you know, they had the captain from the Jaws crew and the doc were out there, because the doc is the one that really masterminded this plan.
Yeah.
And they told the kid to stay back because they wanted him to live in case something bad happened. But the kid comes out with a whole bunch of tugboats, and they drag Godzilla back up to the surface. And Godzilla is still alive and kicking, though, and he's charging up his heat ray. And a really cool sequence where they, like, slow down time, and drop out all the sound and you think they're about to die. But Koichi flies that plane into Godzilla's mouth. He ejects from the pilot seat, from the cockpit. And the plane explodes. And Godzilla, the top of Godzilla's head blows off. Mm-hmm. And then he just kind of falls apart.
Yeah.
And his blue radiation or whatever just kind of streams out in every direction in a beautiful shot. And he sinks. And they've won. Mm-hmm. Or have they? But no, Koichi goes home. He figures out that Noriko is still alive. And, you know, I wasn't quite sure on this scene. I thought, you know, because it shows her, you know, there's an emotional reunion. Mm-hmm. And she asked him, because he told her earlier, my war is still going on.
Yeah.
And she asked him, is your war still going on? It's an emotional reunion. Yeah, usually I don't like it when we have fake out deaths in movies. Because I feel like it kind of cheapens the emotional impact. So it was kind of whatever. But like in the last shot you see of them, you see the back of her neck and like there's these like this like black
veiny
rash or veiny stuff like spreading over her neck. And I, you know, my first thought was radiation sickness. I was like, are they trying to set up something else weird? But I think what they were trying to do is, you know, kind of a dark ending. Because, you know, just like in the war, after we bombed Japan, of course, a lot of people died in the actual bombing. Mm-hmm. But then for years later, people
slowly
were dying slowly of radiation sickness. And I think they were kind of, you know, referencing that and that she's going to die
slowly,
a slow, painful death from radiation poison. She would have been better off just dying in the blast, honestly. But then the final shot, obviously a big reference or taken from GMK. You know, the director even said that GMK is one of his favorite movies. Just like in GMK, where the final shot is the Godzilla's heart still beating at the bottom of the bay or whatever, we see a shot of Godzilla's lower half starting to regenerate his upper half as the Fukube theme blares once again and we cut to credits. So, yeah, that is the plot. And like I said, overall, I think it's really great. You can tell, like I said, they spent 3 years writing this script. You can tell in the character work, by far and away, the best character work, I would say, of any Godzilla movie that came before it. Hollywood mm-hmm. movie, Japanese movie, even the original, which I think the original has very good characters. But not they. You know, this movie really takes the time to give them, especially our main character, Koichi, give him a backstory, give him a character flaw, give him motivation, and use him as kind of an allegory for how I'm sure a lot of Japanese felt coming back from the war. And, you know, I know the Japan Times review, I kind of just read the headline of that review, and it was a generally positive review, but his big issue, the author's big issue with the film is that he said by setting it in the 40s, they avoided contemporary issues. But I think that what is really great about this movie, it's obviously a very anti-war movie. And I think, you know, again, not to get too political, that we really need anti-war messaging. And because, you know, everybody, each side of the political aisle, it seems like somebody wants to go bomb. Everybody wants to go bomb somebody right now.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, we need movies out here saying like, you know, war is bad. Okay. And it is harmful on everybody. And so I think that it's, you know, it's one of those things like it, maybe it's set in the past and maybe it's dealing with a very specific historical event, but the message and the theme is still very relevant to today. And I think, like I said, the other themes is maybe tackle survivor's guilt, you know, cowardice versus in honor and, yeah, you know, all that stuff. Some of it, I said, is more specific to Japanese audiences than us, but I think all that stuff is done really well. And, you know, I love, like, the set design in this movie, the way it portrays post-war Japan as, you know, a very beaten and broken place. You know, the movie, the whole movie, the movie's title is -1 is in reference, you know, it's kind of philosophical that that the war had brought Japan down to zero, and now Godzilla's bringing them into the minus. But it also kind of has a hopeful message, you know, that, you know, if the citizens band together, you know, forget the governments. Nobody needs government anyway. The citizens band together, and if you just believe and you put in the hard work, that, you know, things can get better. Then it kind of ends on that ominous note where she's going to die of radiation poisoning anyway, and Godzilla lives anyway. But that aside. So, no, I, like I said, it's not a perfect movie. I do think that 45-minute stretch in the middle of the second act between Godzilla attacking Tokyo and their big final blowout with Godzilla does drag in parts, and I wish that middle section of the movie was a little more kinetic. But overall, really solid on the plot front.
Yes.
Do you agree with all that?
I agree with everything you just said.
I'm good, because I'm always right.
Oh, I know.
Do you want to talk about some effects? I think that's what we generally talk about next.
Effects were not bad. They were pretty good for the small budget they had.
Yeah, I mean, again, to put this in perspective, it's made for a tenth of the amount of money that these MonsterVerse movies are made for. And it looks really good overall. I mean, listen, I think I've said this on the podcast before. I give really pretty much any international movie a break when it comes to CGI. I mean, obviously, they do not have the resources that these Hollywood studios have to do these giant CGI-driven blockbusters. Now, more recently, CGI in Hollywood's kind of gone downhill as they've overworked the CGI artists, and they're just trying to push these projects out way too fast. But that's regardless. You know, there are moments where the CGI is not great, especially, you know, or when Godzilla's on land, especially during the bright daylight scenes, it looks a little glossy.
A little bit.
His walking motion is better than it was in Shin Godzilla, but it's still not quite natural. But I think when Godzilla's in the water, which is a good portion of this movie, the CGI is really good.
Oh, yeah.
I think the explosions look really good in this movie. His regenerating effect, his heat ray, all that stuff looks really good. The battleships and cannon fire and all that stuff. Like I said, set design is great. When you're working on a smaller budget, it's hard to build these big period piece sets, but I think they do a great job of really making the audience feel like the movie is in post-World War II Japan.
Just all the rubble everywhere.
The rubble.
And small shacks.
Shacks, yep.
Makeshift homes everywhere.
Yep, the costuming, all that stuff is really, really well done. And all the I didn't talk about the acting earlier, but the acting is really good from everybody in this movie. Everyone is doing a great job on the acting front, which really helps this bring this kind of period piece to life. So, yeah, effects, really good. You know, practical. I think there are moments that I feel like for at least a little bit, like some of the close-ups of Godzilla's head with the mine in his mouth and stuff, I feel like some of those were actually practical models at times, and they looked really good. Effects overall, really good. I mean, like I said, you got to kind of give a break to the CGI. The only scene that I was like, ooh, I wish that the light, there's a scene towards the end where Koichi, like Godzilla's walking on some, like, broad daylight. Godzilla's walking in on some farmland, and Koichi, like, tries to lure him back out to sea. And the lighting was just not doing them any favors. It just kind of looked off. But other than that, I mean, like I said.
And some of that stuff can't be helped in some of those scenes.
Like I said, some of it, I mean, you got to give it to them for not hiding it all at night. Because I hate when movies hide bad CG at night. and they don't shy away from it.
No, they don't.
Just like Shin Godzilla. Shin Godzilla didn't either. But I think this movie overall is an improvement. You know, you can tell that they're getting closer to Hollywood standards.
Yeah.
Shin Godzilla was not bad, especially compared to international movies that had came before it. And I feel like this is another step forward for international films in terms of CGI and CGI driven films. And then score. We always talk about the score. It's a mix of an original score by, I hope I say his name right, Naoki Sato. And of course, he reuses some Ifukube themes for a lot of when Godzilla's on screen.
Yes.
Of course, the Ifukube, the re-recordings they've done of Ifukube's music are great. They use, of course, there's, you know, if you look at the soundtrack, there's three tracks called Godzilla Suite, Godzilla Suite 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. And those are the Ifukube themes. And in the first one, you know, you have the bum, bum, all three of them have the bum, 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 bum. And the first one is kind of followed up by the theme that from Mothra versus Godzilla, the dun, dun, da, da, dun, 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 dun. And then, and the second one is followed by first the march, the dun, 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 dun. And then the theme from King Kong versus Godzilla, the, I can't. Yeah, that kind of thing. And then, which I love them bringing back these old themes. And then the third one is just the traditional, you know, theme, then march.
Yeah.
And it's the one that plays over the credits, the first part of the credits at least. And then I think that Sato's score is also really good. It's a lot more simple, a lot more ominous, atmospheric. Choir driven in parts, but I really like it. I think it really works for this movie and the tone and the atmosphere that they're going for. So yeah
overall it did pretty good.
It's a darn good movie, folks. I'll go ahead and say, you ready to get into final thoughts?
Why not?
Well, why don't you just go ahead and start with your final thoughts.
Remember,
you always did, though. We'd always make fun of you for doing the well.
Well. Hey, you know, gotta bring
the classics back.
Well, it was a solid movie. The effects were good. The sound was good. The sound mix was good. Acting was good also. And, you know, I think it was just overall good movie. They did everything the best they could. And even though they had a small budget, they did pretty good with all their effects and stuff.
yeah, for sure. We do a letter grade on this podcast, if you remember, ranging from F to A+.
And you know, I'll give this movie an A+.
An A+. You know, yeah, I really have been deliberating this since we walked out of the theater. I will say definitively my favorite movie of the year so far. You know, I mean, obviously there's been some great movies. Maybe some movies that on a most technical level, maybe bigger achievements. You know, movies like, you know, Oppenheimer. I liked Oppenheimer. I really liked some other movies that I can't think of now off the top of my head. But there have been some good movies this year. But this is definitely my favorite. Obviously, I'm really attached to Godzilla, and that is part of it. I really thought about this. You know, I'm really stingy. I've historically really stingy with my A+. I believe, if I remember correctly, I've only given 2 A+ the whole podcast. One to the original and one to Mothra versus Godzilla. And so I was sitting here thinking, you know, like I said, I've always said on this podcast, and this is going to sound like a knock on kaiju movies, but it's really not. You know, you guys know I love kaiju movies, but we kind of grade on a curve, you know, relative to other kaiju movies. Because, you know, when I walk into a kaiju movie, obviously I'm not expecting a masterpiece.
No.
Like, you know, every time I walk into a Christopher Nolan film, if it falls short of a masterpiece, then it's a disappointment. Or every time I walk into a Studio Ghibli movie, if it falls short of masterpiece, it's a bit of a disappointment. You know, when I walk into a kaiju movie, I'm not expecting a masterpiece. I'm just expecting them to hit all the things that a kaiju movie needs to hit. Now, this movie is trying to be something more. Obviously, they're trying to be, you know, they talk a lot about elevated horror these days. Well, this is elevated kaiju. You know, they're trying to hit deep themes and big ideas. And I think this movie pretty much nails it. I think, like I said, best character work of the franchise. Great effects relative to most of the other films, kaiju films. I think they do, like I said, Godzilla is actually scary in this movie. Yes. They do a great job of making Godzilla the scary, ominous, you know, destructive figure. You know, like we've talked about, acting is really good. Set design, writing, all of it is really good in this movie. You know, like I said, if I were to point out a flaw, you know, the middle portion of the movie can drag in moments. But all things considered, considering all the work they put in this movie and how well they succeeded, and, you know, relative to other kaiju movies, all the other kaiju movies we've watched, I do think this is an A-plus movie. Insert sound effect here. I think I had a sound effect.
Yeah.
I think it was like the Godzilla doing the happy dance thing. I'll have to hunt that down. But, yeah. It's, you know, I was thinking, so when I give it an A-plus, where would I rank it in my Godzilla rankings? You know, I don't think you can say it's better than the original because it borrows so much from the original. I mean, a lot of the plot is intentionally mirroring that original Godzilla film. You know, kind of an off-the-wall, what's the word I'm looking for? Analogy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's kind of like the Joker movie and Taxi Driver. It's like, can you say the Joker is better than Taxi Driver when the Joker is basically just the Taxi Driver movie with Joker in it?
Yeah.
But, you know, so I would probably still rank the original above it. And then I still think if you just want, you know, like your a kaiju movie that gives you all the things that you want to check off in a kaiju movie, you know, city mayhem, city destruction, rubber-suited monster action, you know, monsters fighting each other, you know, a great score from Ifukube, all the old classic Tsuburaya effects. I think Mothra versus Godzilla, I'm not saying it's necessarily a better movie, but if you have a checklist of things you want in a kaiju movie, that probably still checks more boxes. And I've always said that that's my favorite Godzilla movie. So I would probably still rank those one and two, Mothra vs. Godzilla and then the original. But I think this one is, you know, of course, I've only watched it once. I mean, I kind of watched it like 20 more times. But I think initial gut reaction, I think this is making a really solid case for a third best Godzilla movie. My third favorite, at least, Godzilla movie that I've watched. I've watched all of them. So third favorite Godzilla movie. I've watched all of them plus a lot of extra stuff. So
yeah,
it's a really good movie, folks. I think that if you have the financial means to go see it on the big screen, we obviously got to go watch an IMAX. By the time you listen to this podcast, I think that opportunity has come and gone. But it's doing a nationwide release. They've only officially have it in theaters right now for a week. I wouldn't be surprised if that gets extended, if it has a pretty good weekend. Usually these things do get extended. Like, again, another off-the-wall reference, but like Terrifier 2 was supposed to be a one-night event, and then everybody was like, oh, wait, this is a great movie. Put it out in theaters. I wouldn't be surprised if this gets an extended run at least by a few weeks, but you need to go see it before it leaves theaters, because who knows when we'll finally get a physical media release of it. Yep, I love it. It's everything that I, you know, so rare that a movie lives up to expectations, and I think that this is fair to say this movie met, probably exceeded my expectations.
Oh yeah.
So yeah. Ooh, I love Godzilla movies, Andrew.
Godzilla.
This movie's got me fired up. I love it. So, we generally end these reviews with a little bit of news. They just released a new poster for Godzilla X Kong.
Oh, yeah.
And they are going to, I think there's a new tagline. I forgot what it was already. But anyway, I believe they're planning on releasing, there's some kind of Fest Con or something on December 3rd, I believe, and I think they're going to release the trailer then. So, trailer for Godzilla X Kong is likely inbound. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, you know, I just had this on my other failed startup podcast. I had a big spiel about the MonsterVerse, and you know, you guys can go back and listen to our episodes on the MonsterVerse. You know how I feel about it. You know, it's fine. It's whatever. I just don't know about this new movie. From what I've heard and read, I think we're going to continue on that getting sillier trend. And you know that the relative box office success of Godzilla vs. Kong was very much a product of its situation, which was it was COVID. It was one of the first movies, one of the first blockbusters to really hit it with audiences coming back from COVID. It had virtually no competition, a compressed marketing campaign, so a smaller marketing budget than most of these Hollywood blockbusters. I don't know how I feel about another MonsterVerse movie's box office outlook. Unless they just have some genius marketers out there.
Hey.
Because, you know, marketing can really make or break a movie. Just ask movies like Suicide Squad. But so that's that. You know, I wanted to talk briefly. They have, since we've last been on the podcast, I forgot to talk about this in our revival episode. Pluto TV has started a Godzilla channel.
Yeah, they have.
I have it on in the background all the time while I'm working because I get to work from home part-time. So I have a full-time job, but part-time I work from home. So when I work from home, I usually have it on in the background, or if I'm doing housework or doing anything, you know, that doesn't require my full attention, I usually have the Godzilla channel in the background. They have the rights to most Godzilla movies. They're kind of rolling some of them out slowly, but they have a lot of them on there right now. And yeah. I think they also have the rights to the 90s or the early to the TV, the animated show that was the follow-up to the 98 movie. They haven't started airing it yet. They still haven't started airing the 84 Godzilla movie, Return of Godzilla, no. Which I think they have the rights to. I think they just started airing the 98 Godzilla movie and as part of the lineup on Godzilla's birthday. But
there's a few more they haven't.
And they have some other non-Godzilla. They have the Rebirth of Mothra trilogy on there. Rodan, Mothra, you know, some of the classics. I think they have the Rise of War of the Gargantuas.
They played it a few times.
They played it? Okay, yeah. War of the Gargantuas, you know, of course, a classic. That's a great thing. You know, I think that really helps Godzilla. You know, we're in a great time for Godzilla right now. And that really helps with the exposure of Godzilla. People can watch any of the movies for free anytime. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about, of course, Ultraman Blazar. That's the latest Ultraman show. They're simulcasting it on YouTube still. So you can watch that. It's a pretty good show, I would say, by the new Ultraman standards.
Yeah.
But then upcoming for the podcast, what do we got upcoming for the podcast? So I think the only thing I've got nailed down officially right now is next week. Next week, we're going to do the Gamera Rebirth. We're going to talk about that anime, Netflix anime, because we watched it recently. And before it completely leaves our brains, we want to talk about it and get that review out there. Which, you know, spoiler alert, I think we both said it was a pretty good show.
It's not bad.
So, we'll talk about that. And then, there's obviously some big things that we need to catch up on. Singular Point. We need to do a review on that.
The Kong
series. Animated series, which we have not watched yet. We need to do a review on that. Mm-hmm.
Monarch when it gets finished.
I think it's gonna wrap up in January. We'll do a review on that when it wraps up.
And that new Godzilla movie.
X Kong comes out in April, so we'll do a review on that when it comes out. But that still leaves us a lot of weeks that we gotta come up with some movies.
I have some movies on the shelf over there we could watch.
Oh yeah, I'm sure I can conjure up some movies too. So that one movie we watched, a monster movie not too long ago, that was that I ordered, it was from Thailand or whatever. Remember what I'm talking about? I forget what it was called. The Sea Lake Monster Lake Monster or something like that. That would be a good one for the podcast. We'll have to revisit that. But yeah, so I'm not going to do a, I don't think I'm going to do like a schedule a year out like I did previously in their previous iteration of the show, because if we ever missed a week or whatever, it was an absolute pain in the butt to have to go and reset all the dates and do all that. So we're just, I'm going to get a little bit more of a plan going, but we're not, you know, we're going to do a little bit more of a free form, you know, whatever project we feel like doing week to week kind of thing. So, yeah, and I'm going to work on some other things for the podcast, but most importantly, we're back.
We're back.
We're talking about Godzilla, new Godzilla stuff, and I'm loving it.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's about time to wrap up the show. Obviously, we regret that Dylan could not join us today. I was hoping he would get to meet us in Tulsa and watch the movie. Did not get to happen. But hopefully, maybe he'll be coming down on a weekend coming up, and maybe before it leaves theaters, and we can get him in the theater and see it. Maybe he'll be recording, be willing to record some quick thoughts on it that the listeners can hear his opinion on the movie, because I know the listeners are going to miss Dylan being on this podcast every week. I'm going to miss Dylan being on this podcast every week.
He was the most energetic.
Because, I don't know, I think he's pretty energetic. But Dylan was a lot easier to bounce stuff off of than Andrew here, who stays silent most of the time. So,
well, yeah, you know.
Maybe I can get some other guests to come on the podcast, too. I don't know. I'll see what I can do. But maybe we should have an open competition for a new host, co-host.
Hey.
There you go. You know, it would be a lot easier, you know, because a lot of podcasts, you know, there are people who are not in the same place and they're doing a podcast. And Dylan could, you know, call in and we could sync up the audio and do all that. The only thing is with that is that our internet here where we live
is spotty at best.
Is bad. I mean, the best options you have are like 10 megabytes per second or whatever. So I'm afraid if we tried to do that, they would just, the internet would not cooperate. So that's the only thing that kind of makes me iffy on that. So, I'll have to find a local co-host. But we'll see. For now, I think me and Andrew are good. I think we'll work.
We'll manage.
So anyway, if this this episode may not be as polished, not that any of our episodes are ever really polished, but I'm going to try to get this one out pretty quick, so I may not take the time to really go through and edit like I normally do. So sorry if there's any audio flaws, but I think that's it. So, you know, as always, guys, thanks for listening. I'm Aaron.
I'm Andrew.
And we will see you in the next one.